Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
I think I'm the best overall player in this draft, but my main focus isn't necessarily be the best player in this draft. My goal is to be the best player in this game.
This is a Draft Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Sherway Building Center, your summer outdoor project and remodeling store. Online at shurway.com.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Stop breaking news, dude.
The Fan.
It is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon. And man, do we have an amazing radio show today.
We have a great radio show today. There is a guy on Egypt that is rolling around on the ground. He looks like he just got murdered.
He didn't get touched.
He did.
Watch this.
Oh, just a slight glance to the chin.
Watch.
And he is just...
He grabbed his eye.
He is on the ground like somebody just punched him in the face.
There's not a lot of attention.
Oh, wait, no, sorry. He's up. He's okay now. He's fine.
He didn't get that yellow
Paul
or red
Pierce
card.
Paul Pierce is back in the wheelchair. No, nothing to see here. I do have a question, though. Where does everybody go at the halftime of these games? Because this place was packed, and now it is empty at the start of the second half.
Alcohol.
Vodka shots.
They're all
at
taking
halftime?
Vodka shots. It's like an Oregon game, man. College football games get that all the time, where it's empty. Even Blazer games are like that. Start of the third quarter, it is just empty. Everybody leaves at halftime.
Usually takes around the 8 minute mark at a Blazer game for it to be filled back up. You're like, wow.
They have to play the trumpet sound to let everybody know. Da, 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 da. Get your ass back in your seat.
Is there a soccer guy out there or woman willing to acknowledge that the flopping they do drives them nuts?
Yes.
Or is it just universally accepted given the kind of sport it is? Because basketball. There are basketball people that get really upset as Russia just scored accidentally, and they're somehow probably going to win this game that way. There are some basketball fans that hate the flopping in the NBA, and then you get a lot of like fringe/football fan that will watch basketball just so they can make fun of said basketball player.
I can't stand it. There's an option that I think would help cut a lot of it out. For the life of me, I do not understand. Soccer is, of most of the traditional sports we watch, team sports, ball sports. Oh, that's an own goal. That's horrible.
Yeah, Egypt kicked that in.
The soccer field is bigger than a football field.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's bigger than a rugby field, but there's only one referee out there who's supposed to cover the whole thing. So
a lot of
the falling down and the flopping is to draw the referee's attention to what you think occurred and see if you can force him to blow the whistle, just like it is in NBA, where when you take the contact, you hit the ground to draw the official's attention. Why there's not two referees on the field, one in front, one in back, to catch some of that nonsense stuff in the fact, and then another guy can get up closer to the goal and have a different angle looking back on free kicks, on corner kicks, those sorts of things, is beyond me.
Yeah, how do you only have one guy running around out
I
there?
I don't. It doesn't change.
That doesn't make any
it
sense.
It doesn't change anything about the game.
I would have never thought about that.
I didn't know they had just one.
Just see, there's just
right
one
now.
Dude out there in the yellow
don't
jersey.
Tell me those assistant referees can make calls. They don't make calls.
Is that the guys with the flags?
Yeah, they're supposed to make offsides and whose ball it is when it goes out of bounds, and half the time they screw that up. So Don't give me that.
Well, I know the NBA has tried to put fines in if you're caught flopping. They'll hit you with a hit your pocket a little
now,
bit.
Now, the one thing, if an official deems you are, it's called embellishment, but if you're diving, he can give you a yellow card and or red card and boot you out of the game.
Well, which should be done, because that's the way hockey does
time.
It. Hockey will do that where, I mean, even if one guy commits a penalty, like say you trip somebody, you're still going to get the 2 minutes. But if the guy on his way down embellishes the act of falling to the ice, they throw him in the penalty box too for 2 minutes. So it's basically it washes out and it's a 4-on-4 situation. So you can't oversell a penalty. The refs say, we'll see it. You don't need to sell it to us. And if you embellish, we'll give you 2 minutes. You go to the box and you negate the penalty that you drew in the first place.
Well, you know, even football, as tough as that sport is, they do it a lot too. Wide receivers will do it for PI.
Oh, all the time.
And defensive linemen will do it to indicate holding.
Yeah, they'll throw their arms up in the air.
Flop their arms out and act like they're at an angle. Hey, he's holding me!
Yeah.
Quarterbacks will sometimes do it. They'll like barely get touched, so they'll flop to the ground like they were just shot.
Yeah, but in the NFL, you got 7 or 8 officials on the field. There's 3 NBA officials in a confined spot.
Sure.
The NHL finally, how long has it been? 15, 20 years since they added the second referee? There used to be 1 referee and 2 linesmen. They added a second referee to catch that stuff behind the play. Like if there's a breakaway, the official's trying to skate up the ice with it, and then somebody, you know, takes a slash or something behind the play. They wanted to clean that up. In soccer, you have this ginormous field, people running all over the place. The ball can switch directions in an instant, and how's that guy supposed to keep up with it and see everything?
I think those might be the 2 things that bother me most in sports are the flopping, which happens in every sport. Soccer gets it pretty bad.
Baseball doesn't get it.
No, there's not
what's
much.
What's the equivalent to flopping in baseball?
Framing pitches?
Yeah, but that's not.
That's so bang, bang, you know?
Yeah. There's not really. Occasionally you'll get guys. I remember, I think Derek Jeter did this a number of years ago, and it's happened before where guys, a pitch will come inside and they'll try and act like it hit them.
Oh, yeah.
They'll do that kind of, oh, it got me, and they'll try and, you know.
That's a rarity, though.
But that doesn't happen very often. But I would put flopping and then complaining about calls that are obvious are probably the 2 things that make me want to throw my TV out the window the most. Like when you get the guy that is just, it's so clear as day, especially in 2018.
Ooh, Draymond Green.
Yeah, when we have 50-inch televisions that are HD with 800 different angles at it, we can all see that you hammered guy in the that hammered
you
him in the
whacked
paint.
Him on the side of the ear.
You know that you did too. Like we've all played pickup basketball enough to know if a guy's going to the hoop and you whack him on the arm, you know that you whacked him on the arm. What the hell are you bitching about?
Well, I think some players too actually don't help themselves. Like LeBron is a notorious flopper. Like people always Queen James. Here we go.
Yeah.
But sometimes you watch those replays and he gets like when Draymond poked him in the eye and he grabbed his face in the finals, they're like, oh, LeBron. And then you watch replays like, no, his finger really went into his eye.
That was such a disgusting picture. The still shot of it. It's like half of his finger was in his eyeball.
Yeah. And then his eye was red the rest of the finals. You're like, oh, he wasn't flying.
Oh,
some guys, their reputation doesn't actually help sell it to fans that watch the game.
This is a good one from listeners at the fan text line. Kickers and punters are pretty bad.
Absolutely.
Punters are just, if anybody breathes on them, they keel over trying to get that 15-yard
They jump in the air and they got to land on their back.
But they're coached. Wouldn't you say they're all coached to do that?
Yeah, I mean,
if somebody comes in front of you and is close, fall down and see if you can get 15.
Keel over.
Well, you know, I remember one time Craig Robinson was doing a practice at Oregon State and I was there. And he had Eric Moreland, who's in the league right now, didn't foul somebody, but they blew the whistle. And he was like, I didn't foul him. And Craig Robinson goes, if it looks like a foul, they're going to call the whistle. I think that same rule applies for all basketball players. Coaches say, if it looks like a foul, it's going to be called a foul.
You're going to get the whistle in that situation.
It just doesn't work all the time in soccer. Mm. All right, let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap, brought to you in the Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com.
Mm-mm-mm. Thanks to Pelican yesterday for lunch at Cannon Beach.
Oh, hey-o.
I love that facility.
Took Lady Swag there for her birthday.
Yeah, that spot's awesome. Everybody's got to gear up for them too. They were the hit of the golf tournament last year.
I believe Maya will be back
on the 10th hole. That was there was a bit of, I'll just say this, there was a bit of a wait on the 10th tee box.
A lot of putting contests that were going awry
for every group that came through because they threw a hell of a party on that tee box.
I have something to confess to you guys here in about 3 minutes. I'm not proud of it.
Oh.
Yeah, I have 3 minutes. We'll be back from the break. Trust me.
Whoa, that's...
I know.
Oh, quick.
Yeah, something I have to confess that I know will sound really pathetic. We'll dive into the NBA draft a little bit. Toronto wants to make a really drastic move.
Can I get any news out of Portland? Can I just get one source?
Yeah, I got one for you.
You got one?
It just came across the wire about 15 minutes ago. Did you not see it?
No, I did not see it.
Okay, great. I'll give that to you. Former Blazer in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. You may remember this man. He is a fan favorite, or was. And I think he's either dealing with mental problems or he's broke. We'll play that fun game of deciding.
Or both?
Or, yeah, probably both. I guess to do that, you have to be a little bit of both, don't you? 1 o'clock, Theo Lawson's going to join the show. You're probably sitting there going, who the hell's Theo Lawson? Everybody's Swigard's wondering.
I'm going, who's Theo Lawson?
He is a beat writer that covers Washington State football for the Spokesman Review. I want to talk to him about this Mike Leach story. And we may be able to talk about this after we speak to him. Because it is strange. You do not see this with head coaches in college football.
You see guys delve into politics, but this was a little bit of a different turn.
Very different turn. And he's being criticized a lot for it. He's kind of stood his ground on it. Washington State released a statement. So Theo Lawson will join us at 1. The SEC considering doing something that, well, quite frankly, they already do it before games. Now they want to do it during games. And it may be a good thing for everybody else. I'll tell you why. NFL true or false at 1:30. We'll dive into Baker Mayfield a little bit. T.O. is mentoring Julio Jones, and that's got everybody. Oh, all their panties are in a twist now. We got a good show. There you go. That's what's on tap for today's radio program. It's brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company, born on the beach and online at pelicanbrewing.com. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague, at Theater Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. Coming up next, I'm not proud to admit this, but I think a lot of other people are doing it as well. I'll tell you what that is next. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you. Time to get to our Coors Light poll questions of the day. At Dirt and Sprague, what are our poll questions of the day here?
We got a number of poll questions out there today. Let's see here. We will start with, scrolling back, we got a lot of retweets today. Put your GM hat on in the NBA. Your team's on the clock. These four players are available. Which one do you take? DeAndre Ayton?
Him.
Ayton or Ayton?
Ayton.
I mess it up every time. DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic.
Oh, him for sure.
Michael Porter Jr.
All of the above.
So far, Ayton is leading the way.
Well, you disrespected a couple players there by putting Porter Jr. on it, but I
just
like
took
it.
I took those four. You can only have four slots, and I was curious how many people would select Michael Porter Jr. with the injury history. Should alcohol be sold to everyone at college football games of age? Yes, Twitter followers of 21 years or older.
Quick question. I saw you put that poll question, and I saw a couple retweets. Did people really think we were suggesting to let every single human in the stadium drink?
Somebody responded, what about toddlers and children? Like, no, that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm just asking, should it be sold around the stadium?
Let me put whiskey on my 2-year-old's gums to fall asleep.
Could put him to sleep for the rest of the game. No, too dangerous, or yes. What former Blazer did Rip City overvalue the most? Rudy Fernandez, J.J. Hickson, Sebastian Telfair, or Nicholas Batum? And then we got one more here. Would you be comfortable using a top 10 pick on Trae Young? Can he be a star in the NBA? Nope, too small, no defense. Or yes, good fit for the league.
Good suggestion by a listener earlier. Thomas Robinson probably should have made that
Thomas
list.
Thomas Robinson's a good one, too.
So that's kind of on us. But good poll questions. There's your Coors Light poll questions of the day.
Wasn't Thomas acquired in a trade and not drafted, though?
He was, but we were pretty hyped on Thomas.
Draft J.J. Hickson.
No, we did not.
He was a Cav.
Yeah. I, at one point on this show, mentioned, why can Thomas Robinson not be a Dennis Rodman-esque player? Grab some boards, play some defense, extremely athletic. Let's go, T-Rob.
You would have never admitted that. I would have never known.
Yeah, no, I said that. And that came out of my mouth.
Hold yourself accountable.
Hey, we all got
to
do it.
All right, there's our Coors Light poll questions of the day, brought to you, obviously, by Coors Light. Make sure you go get the XP Rewards app that they got. It's really cool. You buy 12 and 18 packs and then register it. You get some points and enter to win some cool prizes. I have to sadly admit this, but I also think I'm not alone here. One is I watched 27 and a half minutes of Luka Doncic film yesterday. I'm not kidding. I was in my man cave and I just went on YouTube and I started watching Luka Doncic. Why? I don't know. Drafts in 2 days.
I'm not upset about that.
And by the way, I love that kid. I mean, that's not a hot take. That's not even an original thought, but I think he's going to be really good. And then I actually dove to the area that I think some Blazer fans are willing to admit maybe they've done. I started reading about a couple players that are not top three or four, you know, the post top five guys.
Right.
And I said, would I be upset if Portland somehow worked out a deal of trading up into a top 10 to go get a guy? So the player that I was really looking at the most that made sense and like not getting too crazy of going, oh, they'll be in the top three. Like if you could sneak into the top seven, eight, and you could draft Michael Bridges, but it required you to trade away CJ McCollum. I was asking myself, how would I feel about that? And then how would Rip City respond to that? So if you don't know Bridges, he is the kid out of Villanova. He is 22. He is 6'7". He is lengthy. Some people think he can add another maybe 5 to 10 pounds. He already put on 20 at Villanova.
Sure.
He shot the three ball pretty efficiently. He can handle the rock a little bit. And he plays really good defense. I dove into the vortex of wondering, would I be mad if the Blazers got rid of one of their two stars and said, we're going to kind of start a little from scratch while still using the pieces that we can't get rid of?
I wouldn't be upset about it at all. I wouldn't. Look, it's a risk because you're gambling on a kid and there's a chance he's a bust. So you're trading a, you know, how many guys in the NBA average 20 points per game? Not many, about 20 of them. It's not a long list of guys. So you're trading away at least a known commodity. We know what CJ is at this point. He's a guy that's not going to play a lot of defense. He doesn't distribute a ton, but he can get you buckets. Probably best served to be a sixth man. And you're risking it on a prospect. But I've had this mindset now as a Blazer fan for I don't know how many years in a row of, what do you got to lose? And just trying to swing something for the upside of a player like Bridges to get the 3-and-D caliber guy that's desperately needed on this roster to shake things up a little bit. It might not be the best for Damian Lillard and his happiness, but at this point, I don't think you have much to lose as an organization, and I would be totally fine with that deal.
That's the biggest caveat is any particular one individual move over another. I don't know. I mean, it would depend on everything that's involved in the package, but I think the biggest thing that you have to do is make sure at least Damian Lillard is open to it. I don't know that he'd ever like it. I don't think he'd.
Here's my problem with
Part of that too is you might not be happy in the moment, but if Bridges has a big rookie year, he's not going to be pissed in a year.
What you cannot allow yourself to do as an organization, and we've seen some teams do this, you cannot bow down to the every wish or feeling of your star player. Now, I do believe in making him happy and including him on conversations. That's a given. But if you were to go to him and say, no, I don't want, and he goes, I don't want you to get rid of CJ. You got to be careful playing that game because one, this is not a loyal sport. We've seen that from the player and team side. Two, he doesn't know as much about that player as maybe a scouting department does or guys that you've hired that trust that can evaluate talent. So if I told you right now, and we're just using one player as an example, and this is not a rumor that's out there. This was just me being bored at my house last night. if I took the Blazers right now and I told you listeners, CJ McCollum's gone. Now you've got a player like Michael Bridges from Villanova who is 6'7". He's a little bit of a project, obviously, because he's a rookie, but he's a 3-and-D guy and has potential to be more than just a 3-and-D guy, quote unquote. Would you be upset? Because here is my thinking. They got the 3 seed last year. It was great. We rode that wave of excitement and slight optimism. And then they got swept. And we realized very quickly that that was fool's gold, that winning streak. So if you get Bridges and you take CJ off, do you lose some wins? Sure.
But probably.
What's the win share value of CJ McCollum in your opinion? If you just threw a number out, I would say 5 or 4, maybe less.
Yeah, not much.
These players don't have as big a win share value as you think.
No.
So for that reason, I would just say, okay, well, if that means us being the 7 seed, we're really no worse off in the playoff picture. We're still going to have a tough matchup and we didn't win our matchup when we had home court last year. And if it means taking a chance on a guy of that size and athleticism, sometimes you just got to roll the dice in this league and say, hey, Dame, we know you're 29, you're going into year 7 and this kid is going into year 1 at 22. But Zach Collins is in year 2. We've signed Yusuf Nurkic. We've got Al Farouk Aminu who can come off the bench or he can play the 4 long Bridges. We got Mo Harkless who can come off the bench. Mm-hmm. Evan Turner is he's kind of hit and miss. We know how frustrating he can be. But you take a flyer. It's not going to happen. We've got Casey Holdall on the show on Thursday. I'm pretty confident to say something crazy like that won't happen. But if it does, I don't know if I'm going to be upset at all if they're able to pull a deal off like that.
No, I think Zach Collins is a good example of that because, and look, I know the jury's obviously still out on him, and he is a guy that a lot of Blazer fans disagree on in terms of what kind of player he's going to be, say, 3 or 4 years down the road. But if you just go back to maybe, you know, last year's summer league watching him and what the opinion was of Collins, and then fast forward to the end of the season of what the opinion of Zach Collins was, it was drastically different. And he showed how quickly a player can develop over the course of just one season. And now going into year two for him, we're kind of expecting him to take that next big step and play a pretty big role for 82 games this upcoming year and be more consistent and maybe use him differently in the offense. And he should adapt pretty nicely in year two in the NBA. That's how quickly it can happen if you hit on the right player. And so if you go get Bridges, sure, there's going to be growing pains in year one, just like there was for Zach Collins. There was moments that he looked really bad. There were nights that he went 0-5, 0-6, and you're like, oh, God. You watched him in summer league, and he looked like he was terrible in summer league. So it's like you can be fearful early on, but they develop fast. I think it's important to remember that with whoever they take. And the reason this is a fun conversation is because one listener chimed in exactly the opposite of the way that I feel. He said, as much as we overvalue our players in Rip City, mm-hmm. We worship our best player here. I think we're equally guilty of disrespecting our number two stud on the roster, undervaluing his worth like we did with Brandon Roy. Nobody gave the proper respect to LA. We lost him. And he's basically saying, now I feel like we're going to do that same thing with CJ. And that's the fun part about CJ is I feel exactly the opposite of that. You know, LA had the chance when Roy left to fill that void and be the guy. And so I don't like using that comparison. Hopefully we don't have to face that with Damian Lillard and seeing what it would just be like a CJ McCollum's team. And maybe he could elevate his game to that point. But I feel like we go the opposite direction of CJ. And I think we overvalue his worth on the market in the NBA.
Interesting.
And I think sometimes when you float out these trade scenarios with NBA experts that come on our show, it smacks you in the face of reality. What could you get for CJ McCollum? Well, Harrison Barnes. I mean, that's the kind of player that he's linked with. You're not getting an all-star in return for trading him, and I think it's important to remember that.
All right, a lot of people texting in on this. This is, by the way, if you're just tuning in, this is hypothetical. I do not want people to be carried away, think we're linking to a story or that we have any source. This is just hypothetical. It's draft conversation, so please spare the text of you guys are idiots. This is total hypothetical trail
we're going down here. You know?
We are morons, but you know what we're saying. So we'll read some thoughts on this. And also Toronto may be looking to go this avenue of what we're talking about. And Trae Young, is Trae Young a top 10 player? I still don't know if I'm convinced he's going to be really good in the NBA or if he's going to be a bust. He's an interesting player to think about. So we'll do some more draft talk next.
Lonely as I
text from a listener. I'm 31. I have absolutely no problem taking a flyer on a 23-year-old project just as long as she has sufficient talent. Hopefully Dame and the Blazers can find the flexibility within themselves to give it a shot. I was happy last time I did.
I see what you did there.
Somebody else. Breaking news from Sprague. Miles Bridges is playoff caliber player. No, I'm talking about Michael. Miles is the other one. There's two Bridges in this draft.
Yeah, we want Michael Bridges.
But Miles Bridges might be a good player.
Sure.
He slotted more realistically of what you maybe could trade up for, but I doubt, again, they will be trading up.
Well, if you want to get your sports pants really tight, with the scuttlebutt out of draft camp is the Blazers might take Anfernee Simmons.
Yeah, he's back in town. That's the kid that passed up college. He went the academy route.
So
6'3", he's a shooting guard, two guard. He's basically CJ McCollum, kind of.
Yeah.
He's a combo guard.
More of a project.
He'll be a backup. Yes. Ryan says, I completely agree with Dirt's assessment with CJ. We totally overvalue him as a fan base. Another listener, we overvalue CJ for sure. He's a great scorer, but doesn't know how to pass, and defense is not there. So there's some people that agree with what you're saying. And, you know, I'm so sure some people are always going to value CJ and you're not gonna be able to talk him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think CJ is a great player. There's no doubt, but he gives you nothing on defense. He doesn't facilitate. I don't think he particularly runs offense very well. If Dame is on the bench. So outside of scoring, what is he? I hate to say this because it almost sounds like a slight, and I don't mean it to be, but to me, I think he's a slight better version of Jamal Crawford. I felt that way for 2 years now, and I think it continues to play itself out. But if Neil Olshey thinks, hey, give me one more year, I'll get out of some of these contracts, then I'll be able to build around those two, that's a wait-and-see process, and I'm not a big, particular big fan of it. That's why I threw out the hypothetical. Do you look at any name, and even if Michael Bridges, the guy we use as an example here, is a top 10 player and you're able to somehow get in that top 10, you take on a bad contract to make money work, boom, you get the pick. Are you willing as a fan base to sit there and go, year one might not be the most stellar, but it's worth taking a shot with somebody that's 6'7" and has the ability to put the ball on the floor, hit three-pointers when he's open, and play defense?
Yeah, I mean, he averaged, what, about 18 points per game last year?
And he played, I think, 25 minutes per game.
32.
32 minutes?
32 minutes per game.
Okay, article I was reading from Jay Wright was basically saying, oh, that was probably his career.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
20 minutes for his career.
Yeah, that sounds about right. He took a huge jump last year, shot 43% from three, 51% from the floor. We mentioned the length and the size that he brings. That's the intriguing part. And yes, I think we're willing to do that as a fan base because, again, I go back to the original statement of what's the alternative of keeping this thing together. We know what that team's going to be next year, and that's not going to get anybody excited. At least this gives us something to talk about, something new, a fresh face, maybe some hope for the future. I was going back and forth with the listener about who said we kind of undervalue CJ in terms of when we talk about him and don't give him the proper credit. I think that the tough part for CJ in my mind, and it kind of highlights what you just brought up, Sprague, is that if his role was different on this team, I wouldn't feel this way about him. If he was the number three scorer, if he was the sixth man coming off the bench, or if we had a roster built in Portland where he wasn't the only guy that you can move to bring something of value in return, I wouldn't be sitting here and saying trade him because we wouldn't have to. You could build around conceivably those two, or you could go get another guard, a defensive-minded two guard, and have him be a sixth man that can come off the bench and score 20 points. That would be a great role to have. But unfortunately, when your hands are tied behind your back the way they are right now for the Blazers, there's nothing else that you can move of value to give value in return. You know, Mo Harkless is a good player, but he's not going to bring you much back. The 24th pick doesn't have any value unless you attach it to something else. Evan Turner, Myers, like none of these guys have value on the market to change or improve your roster. CJ McCollum, outside of Lillard, who's not going to get moved, is the only guy that teams around the league look at and say, hey, we could use a guy like that. He scores 20 points per game. He's a good shooter. He's, he can create his own shot. We could use that guy on our roster. Unfortunately, you only have two of those guys, and one of them you're not going to trade.
Would you switch CJ and the 24th for the fourth pick and Chandler Parsons?
Yes.
Because Memphis is rumored to wanting, they want out of that Parsons contract. That was the dumbest contract given.
Isn't Parsons' contract worse than CJ's?
Oh, it's terrible.
No, it's not. Well, worse. I mean,
because he sucks.
CJ makes more. I think he signed like a $95 million deal.
Yeah, he's got a bad. I think he signed basically almost the Evan Turner deal.
No. He got paid like $20 million
more. He got more than Evan Turner.
Neil tried to get him, remember? And he chose Memphis over Portland. Yeah. So there's rumors that they want to get rid of him.
Yeah,
and
to get the number four pick. Yeah, I would do that. I would take on the rest of Parsons' deal. How many? There's 2 years left on that deal.
2 years, and then they would take CJ, who they would they could be look. And this is again, we're getting into such hypothetical, This is what it is. You could take on CJ. They could say, hey, CJ, the potential there. You pair him with a guy, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley coming back. We really liked what we saw from Dylan Brooks, and what he can maybe do in year two. Memphis is kind of one of those weird franchises where if I say that to you, you could be laughing. Memphis is one of those teams that I would absolutely put in the category of might actually consider doing it. So again, I have no expectation that they're going to make any movement. I know the internet's down.
Yeah.
But it's still, you continue to look at drafts. You look at your team get swept. You can't help anybody from wondering what move can you make to make your team better. Trae Young is another interesting one in this draft. Not from a Portland standpoint. Obviously, you don't need that.
Yeah, you're not going to trade up to four and take an undersized guard who doesn't play defense.
How do you feel about Trae Young? Have you come to an opinion on him?
I don't know, man, because he's one of those guys that is, he's extremely polarizing for me because there are You'll watch him at times and you'll think, I don't see how that translates to the NBA. You have the Steph Curry model in the back of your head. I don't quite see the comparison as closely as some do, but a lot of people thought that about Curry coming out of Davidson. He's small, he's undersized, he doesn't play defense. There's no way in hell that's going to work in the NBA. And look how it turned out. But I did see there was a crazy stat the other day that came out about him in terms of like uncontested three-pointers last year of like when nobody was around him and he shot like 95%. Like he missed like three of them all season.
So they were deep.
He's deep. So he's a phenomenal three-point shooter, which I think that can translate to the league. It just is. It's like a quarterback. It's all about fit. If he goes somewhere and it's a bad fit, this will flame out miserably.
He was taller than they thought he would be too when they measured him.
But if he goes to the right fit, how can a guy that shoots like that not fit in today's NBA?
Especially in this league, right?
The thing for him is if he slides, it actually benefits him more. I know not from a initial financial position as you go down that first, your slotted, allotted rookie contract, but his effectiveness goes up with the more outstanding all-star caliber players on a roster. Because if teams, you saw this late as it went along and everybody figured out on Oklahoma's team who could play and who couldn't.
Right.
So they said, okay, we're going to take him away. And the more bodies they threw out, he just got worn down towards the end of the season.
How much of that? So I see what you're saying about the body thing. That was also a Steph Curry knock. To that, I would respond.
Well, but look at Golden State now in the fact that who you going to leave him for?
What I'm saying is like with Steph Curry, you have to take into account or not Steph Curry, Trae Young. He did get worn down at the end of the year. He still put up really good numbers at the end of the year and he had nobody else on that team.
No, I understand that. That's why I'm saying if he's taken up high in a team that's really rebuilding, that's got to put it all back together.
Atlanta. I think he's going to Orlando.
It's going to be a rough first couple of years for him. If he slides into the teens, if he's taken possibly by a Philly who's got two of those picks or something
Philly
like
that. Philly could use a shooter like that if he's there at 10.
I think if he goes to Philly.
You put him next to Ben Simmons, huh?
I'd be okay with that because Simmons is a bigger guard.
But he was a very ball-dominant player at Oklahoma. Ben Simmons has to have the rock because he can't shoot.
That's true.
But all these young guys have to figure that out when they go in the NBA. You know, very few of them are going to have the ball all the time. They're still a pecking. You know, that's what Fultz is trying to figure out. He doesn't know how to play without the ball, and if he can't shoot in the NBA, what's he going to do?
Right. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. In today's day and age in the NBA, it's just hard to see how he doesn't do well. There's not some value there.
But I think the attitude he has, too.
He does have a good attitude. I think you noted it, though. He has to be able to translate the play off the ball. Like, if he can turn into a great spot-up shooter.
Not if he goes to Orlando, he doesn't.
No, but
If he goes to Orlando, he's going to be the ball-dominant guy. They'll have a guy like Jonathan Isaac on defense. Aaron Gordon is still there. They want to reportedly match him. So there's ways and teams you can go to where he doesn't have to. I see what you're saying about playing out. Steph Curry plays off the ball pretty damn well.
Right.
Guys like him, I think, always will maybe have that. I know we didn't see it a lot in Oklahoma, but when you get in the NBA and you're a really proficient shooter, the league is just basically, hey, run around just a little bit. You're going to get open because we're going to screen the hell for you.
By the way, Chandler Parsons has 2 years left on his deal. He's going to make 24 and then 25 is what I looked up.
Well, I did the NBA trade machine. They both say they make the same price. It works.
Okay.
The money works.
And then if you maybe get a chance to take Doncic number 4, sign me up.
Well, that's a whole other conversation.
He might not be there at 4, but if he is.
How that would go with Dame, though. Doncic seems like he is going to be another kind of James Harden-ish player. Dribble, dribble, dribble.
I'd take a James Harden on this team.
I mean, why would you not, right? We didn't get to the Raptors. The Raptors want to make an interesting move. And also, your former Portland Trailblazer, one of your favorites, did something very, very stupid. And we'll get to those things next on 1080 The Fan. All right, it's 12:49. Welcome back in on The Fan. Yeah, the other, I just saw the text machine and some people think Trae Young is Jimmer Fredette 2.0.
Jimmer Fredette was the same guy in college.
Don't you feel like Trae Young is a better player, though?
How would you quantify
Trae Young's, he's actually better on the break.
Jimmer Fredette was a dominant college basketball player.
Well, he shot a lot. He's a volume shooter.
Yeah. Sure.
I don't think he can do what Trae Young can do.
I think him in the break in the open court as a facilitator, he'll be okay. I worry about him in a half court set when things are tight, if he'll trust giving up the ball with 4 or 5 seconds to go, or he'll start jacking stuff up.
Who do you trust more as a point guard? Trae Young is a point guard.
Yeah, I would trust Trae Young more as a point guard.
Jimmer Fredette was always a two guard forced to play the one guard.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever figured out in the NBA.
He's listed 6'2".
Trey?
Jimmer Fredette is.
Okay.
Let's see what Trae Young.
Trae Young, everyone thought he was like 5'11", 6 foot. I think he came in at 6'1" and 6'1", a half.
6'1", yeah.
At the combine.
Yeah, so he's listed at 6'1".
We won't get to J.J. Hickson there because we don't have enough time, and we'll get to J.J. Hickson later. Remember J.J. Hickson?
I do remember J.J. Hickson.
I remember J.J. Hickson from the Les Schwab Invitational.
Do you think...
Yes, I'm old.
I was going to say you're old. Do you think when we get a baseball team, we'll stop doing this as a city where we fall in love with these role players?
I do think we will, because we'll have more to entertain us. We won't have to get our hopes up about one team. Timbers fans are Timber fans. They're diehard. But for those of us who don't actively daily follow what the Timbers are doing, it's the one show in town. So when you have a guy, you overvalue him, you overtalk about him. It's the only thing you discuss with your other sports friends. If you have another team that the majority of the people follow, then yeah, I think it changes completely.
Well, do Timber fans do that to their team?
Yes.
They have players that they're like, you can't get rid of this guy?
Yeah. I mean, they were kind of that way about when Nagby got traded.
Mm. All angry and upset.
So,
because last year it was Ed Davis. We can't get rid of Ed Davis. Damian Lillard has to play his whole career with Ed Davis.
He's the glue guy.
He's the glue guy.
I do love me some Ed Davis, but I mean.
But let's not act like he's something he's not.
A lot of Ed Davis is in the NBA.
Ed Davis sure didn't do anything in the playoffs, did he? We'll get to J.J. Hickson later as he's in the news. Let's stick with the draft. Let's just wrap up the whole first hour on the draft with this. Luka Doncic. How many people know anything about him? Have you gone out of your own way to look him up, watch highlights, read about him, etc.? I don't know what that percentage is of our listeners. Probably not very high because we're not going to pick him. But Luka Doncic might be the best player in this draft. Some people think he should be the number one pick in Phoenix. But it seems like it's going to be Ayton from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he goes 2 through 4, who knows. But Doncic is going to be in that top 4. And you may not know much about him, but he created a video to kind of show his personality a little bit. And he doesn't have a lot of it. But what he says, we saw this before the show, and I quite enjoyed it. So here you go. You don't know anything about his game, but here is the kid in the NBA draft that might light up the NBA in the next 10 years, Luka Doncic.
I get to pick my journey. Let's go. Year one, I want to win the Rookie of the Year. I want to Boston Echo Zingis. I want to be king of New York. Sorry, KP. Year two, I want to take care of my people and start a business in Uganda. I want my own signature shoes, all NBA, playoffs, All-Star. Yo, Steph, pick me. Year three, I think I'll need a new car or two. And then maybe a beer in his ring shop. He used to call me on my cell phone. And then I'm gonna shoot my shot. Hey, Jen, you up? Year four, train with the best. And finally, MVP of the league. Thank you. Year five, we finally win it. NBA champions. It's all about the ring. Well, I better get started.
Can anybody tell what he was saying?
I was going to say, I felt like I understood it better when we watched it before the show and then we played it. I'm like,
if you're wondering the Jen, I'm going to take my shot. He sends a text message to Jennifer Aniston.
He's a big Jen Aniston.
He's going for Jennifer Aniston.
Friends just getting over to Serbia
just
there.
Debuted 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's going cougar hunting.
I am on the Doncic bandwagon.
You like Doncic?
I am all aboard the train, man.
Luka, yeah.
6'6", point guard.
They list him at 6'9".
They list him at 6'9"?
He's James Harden. He's probably 6'8".
Wow. And I'm firmly on the bandwagon.
People that are concerned about his defense, I saw some lab. They bring in these prospects to do their studies on how athletic they are, how they move. And Kyle Kuzma actually got some traction because he included Damian Lillard in a tweet on this. But that lab had sent out Luka Doncic for those that don't think he can play defense. And they sent out the numbers. I guess he has the ability to move as well side to side as any player that they've seen in a long time. Kyle Kuzma found that tweet and said, it's one thing to be numbers. It's another to get on the court and have to do it against Kyrie and Dame. That one kind of blew up because Dame.
Sure. Yeah, it is.
But of all these guys coming in, he's led his club team in the best European league.
Yeah, he's winning titles.
Arguably the second best league in the world, mm-hmm. against grown men and professionals. And he was the MVP, the Final Four MVP, won a title, and he's 19.
Yeah.
He'll get his grown man strength here in a couple of years, too.
He's only 19 years old.
The defense, and we're against it. The defense part of the draft is standing. I heard this yesterday, and I just laughed because it's so true. A lot of these players we nitpick every year in the draft. Well, he doesn't play good defense. Okay. How many players in the NBA are great two-way players? Great.
There's not
probably
a whole
count
lot
them
of
on one or two hands.
Yeah. Kawhi, Klay Thompson.
Klay can't create for himself.
True. Yeah, he's just a phenomenal shooter.
You can say Draymond. Draymond is a facilitator. It's really, you know, which is good to have for that team, but if you put him on his own team
LeBron,
to run an offense.
Chris Anthony Paul when Davis, he's healthy.
Okay. Anthony Davis, Giannis.
Is Giannis that great? He's a shot blocker.
He's got the wingspan to be a, you know.
I don't know how great of a defender, but the wingspan helps him make up for things. Like, that's my point, though. You named 5-6 guys.
Yeah.
And we sit here and we look, he can't play good defense. Barely anybody can play good defense.
Yeah, James Harden can't either, and he almost got to the NBA Finals this year.
LeBron James is so good on offense and sharing the ball that his team was second to dead last in defense in the NBA, and they got to the Finals. So defense, we value defense, but sometimes we make a bigger deal out of it when we're critiquing these players than I think we need to, especially for incoming rookies. They're going to struggle. We all know that.
Right.
Very few guys go into the league and dominate right away. All right, we have a loaded second hour. We're going to start with Theo Lawson. He is a beat writer for Washington State Football, and he writes for the Spokesman Review. What does he make of all of this Mike Leach stuff that's going on following a tweet that sent out a fake conspiracy theory video involving Barack Obama? A lot of heat being applied to Mike Leach. How is that going over in Pullman? We'll talk to Theo Lawson in hour two next. Dirt and Sprague back with more on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.